Okay, thanks again for coming. We're excited to have you here. This session is organized by IEEE. For those of you who don't know what IEEE is, originally it stood for Institute for Electrical and Electronic Engineers, but in the meanwhile it spread to many other professions, including medical, legal, mechanical, and many others, so we just kept it as an acronym. This specific session again is organized by IEEE Computer Society and by IEEE Future Directions Committee. And when thinking about the workforce, which we've done over the years during pandemic, we organized a special session on this and we issued a report. I was thinking, who can we bring to this session? And so we wanted to blend different type of contributors. So we had a lady from Latin America who can bring perspectives from other parts of the world. We have a recruiter from Amazon who will tell us how recruiters look at the workforce, and you can talk to him afterwards. And then we have IEEE Computer Society Past President Nita Patel, who will tell us what kind of help do professional organizations help. I will just ask them to introduce themselves with a couple of sentences.
Hello, everybody. I'm very honored to be here. This is an incredible city, and also it's an amazing festival. I'm from Argentina. I'm an electrical engineer and also work in the speech processing area. But I'm also not an academic, but I'm working in industry. And IEEE helped me develop industry in Latin America. And I could see how the artificial intelligence is plunging into the whole arena. So I think that, that will be interesting to talk about.
Thanks, Roxanne. My name is Jeff, recruiter at Amazon. I've been at Amazon for about 12 years. And I think the reason I was allowed in the room today was I recruited computer vision and AI professionals starting up the initiatives at Amazon, such as Amazon Go, which is a shopping experience in physical stores. Amazon One is a pay-by-palm technology. Amazon Dash Cart is a grocery cart that you can put things in and it automatically detects. And I was leading up the recruiting in that area.
Hi, good morning. Nita Patel. Also a vice president of Otis Elevator, responsible for a global engineering design team. So really appreciate the impact of how new technology impacts the workforce as you look for skills development. And then as past president of IEEE Computer Society, computing is anticipated to be one of the big areas, not only creating AI, but also affected by AI in shifting of the workforce. So I'll bring a little bit of that perspective from our global organization.
And even though I will be asking them the questions, by profession I am HP fellow and VP. I work on technical things together with Mike and others. I work on system architectures in future generations with focus on AI and many other things. So we wanted first, before we jump onto the questions, and I promise you we'll try not to use all hour because we are looking forward to your questions as well, but we wanted just to give you a little bit of description what we think AI is. And we narrowed it more around artificial general intelligence, not just generative AI that happens today, but also what is coming. So we looked at narrow AI, which is things like Chess, Go, and other chatbots that existed. Then what happens today with ChatGPT, Bard, and many others, it's really AI, not narrow, but broader sense. What we think is coming is this general intelligence. It can go anyways, and we'll show you where it could potentially go. And then there's super intelligence, which you usually see in the movies, fiction books, and other things. If we think about future of AI or AGI, there are different scenarios, and we troubleshoot those quite a bit. When we started, we were extremely pessimistic. A colleague of mine had like 7 columns of pessimistic outcomes, and we narrowed it down to just one. But someone said, well, hey, you know, AGI can also fail. You know, as a technology, it may never happen. And we've seen that. You know, when I was starting my PhD, I wanted to do it in AI, but then it went down and came back, went down, came back many times. So that's another possibility. But pessimistic outcome is AGI as a superintelligence where it takes over whole humanity. And you can see that. I mean, on the way here, I saw a movie, The Creator, and it speaks exactly to that scenario. Hopefully it won't happen. The optimistic one is where AGI helps humanity. It's just another tool that helps in the ways that we will discuss during this session. So with that on mind, with this general context, I have the question for these esteemed panelists. And the first question is, how will AI affect workforce most and how least? And we'll start from here and then we'll start skipping after that.
Okay. Well, I think AI will change completely the way that we work. AI, it's not just a technology or just a tool, but it's everywhere. It's ubiquitous because, you know, like the revolution that we had many years ago when internet came into play, we didn't understand at that moment how the world is going to be after several years. And now you know that we cannot work without internet. Everybody knows a lot about them. AI will go that way, but differently, because AI, it's a different kind of revolution. We are not just uniting people. We are just developing another kind of intelligence that we don't really understand fully. And I don't know if we engineers are going to be able to understand it in the full sense that it's going to be. Because when you start developing an AI, you know how to train it. You have the data that you want to put into that AI to make it work the way you plan it to be. But after you release this intelligence to the public through an app or whatever you're going to do with that, it starts to grow by its own. So it depends on the people that it's working with this AI, the way it's going to turn. So at this time, we are not really sure how it's going to be the future. And of course, it depends a lot about us, about the way that each one of us is taking care of the AI we are working with, how to approach those AIs. And of course, we don't know what's going to happen with the governance, because at this time, I think that the governments are not really sure how to regulate AI because they don't understand AI, okay?
Great points, Roxana. Jeff, what's your take?
You know, I'm gonna come with, you know, answering the question, how's it going to affect the workforce most and least? And I'll tell a story about my opinion, which is I think it will make us more efficient. Least, I think business judgment or critical thinking. So I was in a meeting with my manager's manager, and he asked, he was like, hey, Jeff, have you seen ChatGPT? I'm like, yeah, I played around with it a little bit. You know, I understand what it is. He goes, okay, check this out. And he says, how should I recruit computer vision professionals? Which was my job. And ChatGPT goes, and it lists out my entire job description. And I'm like, well, that's pretty scary, actually.
You turn it off immediately.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, so what are you getting at here, Brandon? What's the whole thing? And I said, all right. So I took a deep breath, actually. And then I said, okay, ask it, what should I do first when recruiting computer vision professionals? And then it said, ChatGPT wrote back, and it said, it kind of depends upon your specific circumstances and your order of priorities, but let me just give you the list again. I'm like, oh, okay. ChatGPT doesn't have my job yet. So that's a little bit about how I think that AI will make us more efficient. It will get us to certain answers, but we are still going to need to be relied on for business judgment and that human instinct.
great personal example. Thanks, Jeff. Nita?
Yeah, thank you. So in terms of the most, certainly those large data sets, analytics that can be done actually based on language models versus logic models, there is actually a deficiency in AI. Doesn't really appreciate the idea of logic, but it could do things based on syntax. And so those things will be affected by AI, but not the things where you have to do computations or critical thinking or understanding of a logical sequence of if this or then that. So things that are fundamental will probably get transferred over to AI that you could truly do on large data sets or things that are available based on language. And the thing I think about, especially in the computing world, is, you know, we went, when we introduced computing, to having this ability of very niche programming, truly understanding the hardware we abstracted with compilers, moved up in from assembly language to C language, where you abstract that information. But it actually created more jobs. It got rid of the assembly writers or the detailed, you know, VLSI designers, but it created more applications. So I think you'll see the same trend of moving up in skills. In terms of least affected, we're all analog in some sense. So there was this idea that digital was going to take over analog and you're not going to ever have to need microphones or speaking, you know, tools. And that didn't happen. It just changed how we use it. So in the sense, you're still going to have to deal with humans. And humans are complex people. So anything that deals with that, helps us understand that, figure out why and how we think and where we work and where we make interconnections, those things are not going to get taken over by AI. It's just going to change the level of where the workforce operates to a higher level.
Excellent, Nita. I like your example. It's almost like innovator's dilemma. You know, things are moving upwards, not just apply to products, but to people. So this time, we would like to look at some specific examples. And I came up with this table more to bring up some examples, not to go into details, not to generalize. So if I think about how skills will evolve, obviously there will be more and more AI programmers. Data scientists will also accelerate, not as much as AI programmers, not as much as they were. I think solution architects will always be needed, no matter what. You know, that will not change. I think support will start slowing down, just like Jeff was pointing out, not quite yet, but it's going that direction. And then I brought up system administrators as even other extreme, where a lot of things will be automated, so there'll be less. They won't go away either, just like assemblers. Assembler writers still exist, but there are many fewer than they used to. So with that in mind, and now started with Jeff, the question is, which types of the workforce will be affected most?
Yeah, I think that my answer is going to seem pretty obvious at the front, but I'm going to just go with it anyway. I think that technology aspects are going to be affected the most, and I think that when it comes to human resources, there's still some experiments being done even when it comes to how we evaluate candidates coming into the application stages at companies and things like that, but there's still a long way to go in terms of these human feeling type of workforces that really need a lot more work in terms of making sure we get those right, so we aren't removing the wrong candidates from our pipelines, or if we're doing anything else. I think that that is a little bit about where I think that technology, though, you know, again, you mentioned software development engineers, AI professional, machine learning engineers. I think with every tool, with every advancement, you know, their job just gets that much more efficient. So that's my thought on that.
Thanks, Jeff. Nita?
Yeah, thank you. So I think this is one of the first times, and maybe not only, but one of the early first times where white collar, what we traditionally think of white collar workers, will be affected more than the traditional blue collar. Even the early stages of automation, the impact was going to be on a lot of manual labor, replacing assembly line workers with automated robots. This, I think, is one of the first times where we're going to actually see an effect on the white collar workforce, which is quite unusual, right? And usually it's about taking physical labor and converting it to more efficient. Here we're taking actually thinking and converting that to more efficient. But I just don't think it's actually going to get rid of job. It's going to create different workspace. And this white collar impact is probably one of the unique aspects of AI that I don't think we have a lot of history or data with. But maybe in a sense we don't need it, because typically the white collar workforce is considered also to be the most nimble and the most able to upskill, and they have some of those advantages. So maybe we'll just be working in a different space with more efficient space.
Thanks, Sita. That's a very interesting perspective. I never thought about it that way. Roxana, what is your take?
Okay. I think that we are here with a problem with all professions. So as Nita mentioned, of course it affects the professions that are more skilled. But for example, there are also professions that see this avalanche in AI as a threat, and maybe it's not. For example, the artists are also challenged by AI, but in a different way, because there is something that AI is far from getting at this time, and this is imagination. The imagination that you think you see in AI, it's a fake imagination, because it relies on the data that has been trained in that AI. So your imagination is something that AI cannot replace at this time. And we hope that it's not going to happen in the near future, or maybe in the far future as well. But this is not the only thing that you can take advantage of. The other thing is about how to communicate with AI. The communication with AI, it's a fundamental skill. So if you want to have an upskill in your set of tools, that will be the way you have to learn to communicate to the AI. Because the AI cannot guess what you need. And if you just put some words to get the information, the context, it's not there. So you have to create that content. In the tech world, we call it prompt engineering, but it's just communication. So if you have to develop a skill right now, no matter what is your profession, try to find out what prompt engineering is and learn how to use it the best way in your app.
Okay, thank you. Do you want to add something?
Yeah, if you don't mind. Actually, I think Roxana put up a really good point in terms of upskilling, and I think that a part of the workforce that's really going to benefit from the AI are college grads or new entrants into the workforce, because you've got this blank slate and you've got this opportunity to, you know, be able to develop skills in AI and learn and, you know, become more adaptable to what's going on, aren't set in a specific career line. I think those who are more agile are going to be more successful in the workforce. But just wanted to say that was a really good point, Roxanne. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on. And again, if anyone wants to add anything at any point, feel free. We don't need to. So I stole this from someone who stole from someone else, et cetera, et cetera. But the point here is that AI is disruptive, but it will not replace your favorite profession. Instead, those professions who use AI will replace those who don't use AI. And I think this speaks to the point that if you use AI as a tool, you can be much more efficient, more effective, you can be ahead of the game. So with that on the mind, the last question, last prepared question, and then we'll rely on the audience, is how can workforce best prepare for AI? And we'll start with Nita this time.
Yeah, thanks, Dehan. So this is a tricky question, because what if it fails, right? You'll do all this preparation and it won't be for naught. But what I think you can do is understand where AI has advantages and doesn't, because I completely agree. You're not necessarily going to replace a whole set of job categories. You're going to replace them with those that use it. And I think about, like, people talk about inventions all the time, right? The purpose of invention is to increase productivity, the way we live. And my husband always says, well, the biggest invention was the wheel. And everybody's like, that's not an invention, the wheel? How is that an invention? But if you look at the history of the wheel, it is a huge invention. So Europe, Asia adopted the use of wheel for things beyond just a toy. They used it to help with transportation. In Mexico, North America, we had all these waterways and we didn't adopt it as quickly. And so Europe, Asia actually invaded, and also similarly in Japan. That invasion was possible because the community, the people in those portions of the world, adopted a tool in a way to enable them to be more efficient, more productive, and then they conquered those that didn't. And this is the same thing with AI, when I think about it, is you have to understand how can you use it, where can you use it, where does it improve your efficiency, what is it giving you that others may not have, and then you apply it, and then you can conquer other parts of the world, I guess, is the theory.
This is very deep thought. Do you think AI is using wheels?
AI doesn't know how to use wheels yet, but maybe.
Okay. Roxana?
Okay. I can give you a perspective from Latin America that I saw in the past with other technologies. In Latin America, there are, at least as I see it, two sides, the ones that want to embrace technology and the ones that don't want to embrace technology. And the ones that don't want to embrace them, they try to fight against it. And they do whatever they can to put an obstacle to that technology. And sometimes they are successful because technology is not that pervasive everywhere, and there are places where it doesn't reach. So they think that they had a point and they could survive this way. But they learned the hard way that, for example, internet has something to do with approaching people and giving people what they need and make life easier. So now the vision is more about ages. So if you are young, you embrace technology directly. You are native to technology. So for those guys, there won't be a big problem to embrace AI. They are using it at school, and this is a new problem that we have, how to deal with it, this. But the elder people have problems, so maybe AI for them, it's something that they don't want to embrace or they don't understand. So if you are in the middle, my recommendation is embrace AI the best way that you can, but don't fight it because it doesn't make any sense.
Thank you, Roxana. Jeff, we saw you already embraced AI, but what else do you have to answer this question?
Yeah, I believe in safely tinkering with AI. I think that the thing that really made me comfortable as I was exploring was I already had realized that it was in my life just by looking at my iPhone and realizing that my pictures were grouped by family member. You know, my iPhone knows what my kid looks like.
Those who you like and those who you don't like.
You know what? And I'm glad that the AI hasn't gotten to the point where it's like separating like the people who I like and I don't. But you know, it's you know, but my family already being, you know, separated out, like I'm like, okay, so it's here. And that's a pretty safe application. Okay, let's go into ChatGPT next. And then just starting to learn a little bit about how it can make your life easier. I think that even just walking into a grocery store and even thinking about like how they stock the shelves, I mean, that's data science in and of itself. That's there. So they're making sure that your potato chips are there. So it's a little bit about how I feel like safely tinkering, being able to just do some reading on the internet and just understanding like how is it already part of our daily lives, and then you know, then from there, how do I put it into my work applications? That kind of goes back to your point is, okay, so what I'm doing right now may work, but how do I implement AI into my job to make my job easier, which isn't this the moment we've all been waiting for where our jobs finally get easier? Like, I mean, just becoming more efficient and, you know, you have more time for other things. So that's my thought.
Okay, thank you. Nita, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, the Jeff's comment about classifying his family members and then your point about like and dislike. And actually, one way the workforce can prepare is understanding how you want to classify things. Like, you do actually want to classify by name of kid, but you don't want AI to know who you like and don't like. And that's the same thing in the workforce. There are pieces of information that you as a company, as an organization, as an entity, will not want to have available. And so actually we're finding a lot of companies are restricting the use of AI because people don't have that ability to differentiate yet of, do I want to classify by name only, or do I like this kid or not like this kid, right? So I think that's where people personally can improve and use the tool in a way that enables efficiency, but not broad thinking, and I don't think AI would be able to handle that.
I can't agree more. Actually, a couple of days ago, I was listening to one keynote where a famous professor said that way to secure future from AI is not to share our objectives with them as you program. So I think we are almost done with the first part of this panel. I will ask you to come, not yet, but almost there, to come at the mic, line up, and ask the questions. Before we do so, I wanted to give opportunity to our panelists to close the first part by making statements. And given that background, I would ask Nita to provide the perspective of professional organization of which she was president, Jeff to speak about recruiting perspective, and Roxana to tell us how things look like from AI perspective in Latin America. Nita?
Yeah, so just like any other technology, from a professional organization, it's about skills development, and so IEEE Computer Society is very focused on not just the skills development aspect, that, but also the research and into information of how do we look at where is this going. So I'd encourage any of you to come and check out the website or reach me afterwards to understand how we're making an impact on both advancing the research, but also improving the skills base through training and courses and things like that.
Jeff?
Yeah, from the recruiting perspective, I think that it's really just the beginning for AI in recruiting. I know that there are options, for instance, in LinkedIn to have messages written for you based on you know, somebody's LinkedIn profile, so you can make that reach out a little bit more personable. But I still think at the end of the day, there is a human touch required. I think that candidates would still prefer to hear from their recruiters using their voice, and that's something that I still continue to do. Is I can see where it would make it a little bit more efficient, but there are certain things that I want to look at in regards to the jobs that I'm trying to recruit to. And I'm going to trust my, you know, my thought process on that as I try to build a relationship with candidates.
Thanks, Jeff. Roxana?
Yes. From the Latin American perspective, I would say that people that are already working in any area, they will adopt AI easily because they understand that we are in a competitive world, and the best way to be prepared is to adapt. And that's one of the key things that we have. So this is a new environment, and we have to adapt to this environment, and it's going to be hard, but we accept the challenge. So that's what I think.
And I was thinking, what kind of summary could I give? I'm wearing multiple hats, so I decided for this part to give you a perspective of predictions. So within Computer Society, we've done annual technology predictions, and to my surprise, out of 21 technologies, only 4 were related to AI. But then when I looked at all others, they were most of them influenced by AI. So AI really influenced broadly. So that was technology predictions. Within future directions, we've done megatrends. We identify AGI as one of the key megatrends. The other two were digital transformation, which is on the tail end, and sustainability, which is probably very active now, but AGI is coming. So with that, I would like to give opportunity to the audience. When you ask the questions, please try to be succinct. Don't go into long statements because I will have to introduce AI-supported mic failure.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for a great panel so far. I had a question about how institutions are tracking change in AI. We talked about it from the individual perspective, how a person can stay ahead. But looking back at the scenarios that you showed early on in the panel, how are institutions supposed to make plans when the technology is changing and the development is happening maybe faster than institutions can keep track of it? And of course, very few of us actually work alone. We're always operating in the context of the way that our institutions are thinking about AI. So as leaders, we'd love to hear how you're thinking about that.
Who wants to take it?
Yeah, I'll tackle that. So as I said, even in my company, we've restricted the use of AI for a couple of reasons. One is it's not fully reliable, and two, we don't want our IP to get into the language models that exist, right? We don't want to train AI on some of the IP. So I would say Jeff's point about tinkering is probably where we are in truly adopting AI. Like, all technology has an adoption curve. And as you guys probably know, adoption curves have increased in the rate of how they happen. But I think we're still on the very cusp of it. So one way for institutions is to track the actual outcome of it, because I don't think we appreciate that yet. We don't actually know where the benefit is, and that is because it's so new. So I would take the look, monitor, sort of follow, be a little bit slightly lagging and see how the research kind of comes out, primarily because you want to both protect but also not keep updating your AI bot every, 3 months.
Okay, Roxana, I wanted to add something.
Yeah, in universities, AI is also a big concern, and we are studying the curve of knowing what to do. We are preparing panels to discuss this with experts and try to see how to tackle that, because students are already embracing AI. So what are going to do the professors and the authorities to make it work? And it is a revolution, really. So far, they are just discovering that we don't really know what to do, but they are working on it. And so the things are going to change a lot from now on, and we don't know how yet.
Thank you, Roxana. Would you mind please introducing yourself? I forgot to ask the first speaker.
My name is Anupam Saraf, and thank you for an excellent, diverse perspective on AI and workforce. So AI allows us to do many experiments and fail safely in some ways. So a lot of people seem to be deploying it as an assistant or several assistants instead of simply one person trying out one thing at a time. So firstly, some comments on that. And secondly, as a consequence of this, the cycle times of our processes are rapidly decreasing and the throughputs are enormously increasing. And so this probably means a lot more for humanity and the world and all the business processes that we run. And so maybe some comments on that. Thank you.
Wants to take it?
I agree. Jeff kind of said the same thing, right? This makes your job easier in some ways, right? You have these critical deadlines. Now you can use AI to accelerate your experimentation design. I think one caveat, though, is something that as an institution, as an individual, we have to be careful with any new tool that gets introduced is, do we understand its limitations? I'll tell you a funny story. Like, hiring programmers, we had a new engineer who started, was doing some work in MATLAB simulating, gets a result. And I look at the results and I'm like, does this make sense to you? Because the answer was like doing some path estimation you can get from A to B in 5 seconds. And I'm like, can this actually happen? And he's like, absolutely, that's what the tool told me. I'm like, do you realize this is like on the other side of the world from where we are today? What technology will get you there in 5 seconds? He's like, but it doesn't matter. The tool said it's 5 seconds, so it's 5 seconds. So I think that's part of this, like, being careful. Yes, it makes our job easier, but you also have to say, is it actually making my job more accurate? And so I think you want to experiment, but cautiously experiment.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to build off of that. Yeah, I think that it's a great question, and thank you for it, by the way, because, yeah, you can get these piles of data, and suddenly it can almost become overwhelming. I think that that was kind of the essence of your question to a certain extent, and then suddenly you're forced to make a business call in terms of, like, okay, here's all this data that's coming so rapidly. How do I choose the right one? And so I think that as the technologies emerge and as, you know, data science continues to be able to funnel those down, that's going to make it easier. But for the time being, yeah, I think that, you know, there is going to be piles of data where we're still going to be empowered to make the right decision based on this gargantuan data set.
Yeah, I was going to add both to previous question and this question that companies are very careful about this. There are all kinds of ethical evaluations before anything is done. Government is doing the same thing, but also the customers are doing as well. When big companies like Google or Microsoft cause some problems, like, I don't want to go there, it's very sensitive, but when errors are made, they are paying attention to that, they're withdrawing products, versions, etc. So we as a whole community are responsible, not just organizations, not just individuals, but all of us. And by the way, introduce yourself and your affiliation if you would prefer to do so.
Okay, great. Thank you. So thank you so much for the discussion. I'm Owen Davis. I'm an economist at a grant-giving organization called Siegel Family Endowment. I'd like to offer, I guess, a mild provocation. I think something that I haven't heard in this panel, and I don't think anywhere in the South by discussions of AI so far, is thinking about AI not just used by workers, but AI applications that are being used on workers. So this is things like monitoring and surveillance, keystroke tracking, performance evaluation. These sorts of things are already in place and ramping up, and I think this is a different question than the AI that might replace workers, but rather AI that replaces or augments their bosses. And this is also a place where that blue collar, white collar divide might actually look different in terms of who's affected most. So I was wondering if the panel could speculate on that point.
Anyone wants to tackle it?
Yes. Okay, thank you for your question. Yes, we think that AI, it's going to be or it is already something that could change the world, that the way that we live, because we now have privacy as an asset that it's going to be challenged in several ways, and it's not depending on us. It's depending on how governance is going to take place in the future, and how we are going to regulate our privacy and our data. But we are already inside that circle, because social media already have a lot of information about us, and we are allowing it to take it all the time. Now that we have a greater intelligence that can use that, of course, it's a bigger threat, but it's in our responsibility to follow what the governments are going to do with all the data that they are recovering and how they are going to use with the AI. So I will be vigilant of whatever is going on around AI.
I just wanted to bring up, and then we'll move on to other questions, that everyone is talking about the phones. I think the next level are sensors, which are deployed everywhere, which are in much larger numbers than number of phones, which are approximately one or few per individual. And AI will be deployed there in the form of inference engines that will reduce the data, plus could be used for anything. So it's a real concern. It's not mild provocation. I think it isn't provocation at all. It's just the fact of life. Mike? Anita?
Yeah, I think it's a very fair question. But it also definitely has a lot of negatives, but there's some potential positives out of that too, right? It's not like performance assessments weren't happening. It's not like bosses weren't evaluating their workers, right? Maybe there's a positive that we might be moving from some subjective measures, like, hey, did I happen to see you in the office, to some objective measures of what did you actually deliver and how was it getting, you know, logged into it. And the other aspect of it is that I think there's some analysis being done that actually AI on large data sets and pulling information based on actual results is giving weight to contributions from some of the underrepresented groups, with women's work in code actually getting highlighted, with underrepresented communities actually being, because their contributions were actually used more, but they just weren't getting, so it's not all negative. I think it's a very fair point, but there it has to have some responsible thought, and there could be some positive out of it.
It's just a tool. It could be used for wrong and good purposes. Mike?
Hi, my name's Mike Ignatowski. I have a question on practical advice for mid-career transitions, especially asking Jeff here. And I ask this because I have a family member in this situation. Someone who is in mid-career, a programmer, gets laid off in their mid-30s, not sure they have much of a future, but doesn't want to go back to college to get an AI degree, and is skeptical that taking an online course would convince a recruiter that they're suitable for an AI job. What do people in this mid-career type of situation do to get into the AI train?
That's a good question. Thank you. So there are, the job market right now is wonky, Mike. It is really wonky. And that's the thing, is that I could see the hesitancy of, taking a course just because maybe a recruiter wouldn't see it as like, you know, going back and getting your master's. And that's a lot of money and things along those lines. Actually, I think that, I think there's actually room for on-the-job training. I know that a lot of companies are actually actively upskilling their programmers to incorporate AI in their work. And it's actually something that a lot of the big companies are doing right now. It's actually there. So I don't think that your colleague, your family member, I don't think that they're behind. I think we're all learning it at the same speed. I would tell this individual to not give up. I don't think that that's a situation where they would need to do a massive career change. I just think that they need to find a company that would invest in them in order to upskill them so they can, you know, continue to grow with the times.
Roxana?
Yes, I will also add that AI offers new opportunities for programmers, because we have to teach AI how to program. So we need to develop applications, new applications that will program in the future. So we need programmers to program that. And this is not something that you have to learn from the beginning if you are a programmer. You can use your skills and do a course and upgrade to work there too.
And Mike, you brought the resume with you?
Pardon?
You brought the resume. You got it, Ken. Thank you.
I'll get it.
Right, okay, on. Next.
Hey there, I'm Jeff Woods. I run a company called AI Leadership. We focus on teaching leaders how to use AI as a tool for strategic decision making so they can make better decisions in less time. I'm curious, if you look at what occupies the time of a knowledge worker, the vast majority of their week is meeting to meeting, checking emails, messages, and then saying yes if somebody asks, hey, do you got a minute? They get to the end of the day, they know they were busy, and they genuinely question what they got done. As we look forward, I think if you look at most of people's time is spent in low value 80% work, not invested in high value 20% priorities. I'm curious how you see the skill set that's required for the future knowledge worker changing. My hypothesis is we're going to go from operational to strategic, but I'd love your thoughts.
Yeah, definitely critical thinking is certainly higher on the list, right? Like I said, you get an answer that says you can go to the other side of the world in 5 seconds. You got to be able to, like, is that rational? Is that real? Be able to do that. I think there's the same thing with using AI as a tool. Is this make sense? How does it apply? And also, where does it apply? Where should I make the connections? Because my background is a little bit systems engineering, and to me, that is where not only the science of engineering is the interconnection between points, but that's the science of leadership, is how do these things relate to themselves, and where do I need to worry and make a decision? So I think that's the type of skills that leadership and more white-collar work is going to focus on, is the critical analysis, it's the intersection of ideas, it's the how does it operate as a system, and where do you apply it, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure AI can also help offload some of these makeup work, replying to emails, et cetera, while filtering the critical thinking, too. So I'm picking up on Nita's glass half full perspective. Thank you.
Thank you.
We don't have much time, so if we all could try to be concise.
My name is Rob Mann. I set up AI operations in corporations. Your slide on which jobs were going to grow, which were going to decline in the general sense, that one, had very good general categories. What are the specific new jobs, though, that come into existence with AI from your perspectives? Because these industrial revolutions, if you look at the internet, millions of new types of jobs. So I'm looking for the ML ops perspectives or the experience design perspective that you have for AI, new types of jobs. And don't necessarily limit it to generative AI using LLMs. There's a broader category.
Yeah, so Roxana touched on it a little bit. It's like now you have this whole category of workers that actually have to train and program the AI and get it to understand. I think there's a logic flaw in AI. So for me, one of the new jobs is actually finally distinguishing between the sort of tactical, everyday rote part of the white collar work and the actual if then else kind of part of logic thinking. And I think that is actually going to create like a new category of jobs. And then there's the things like ethics and AI, data and analytics. You actually have a lot more data with AI than you ever did. So instead of getting like, you know, a meeting where I had 5 people giving me input, when I ask AI, I have like this conglomeration of tons of input. Now I have this like whole distinguishing. So for me, there's those opportunities.
Yeah. I also think security is going to go up as well. I think that that's been a hot topic. I think they had a whole convention about with big leaders in AI about a week or two ago, and security is definitely going to be moving forward as one of those hot jobs.
There will be jobs trying to find out what is fake and what is real from everything that we see and we hear, because now we cannot rely on our senses anymore. We have to be trained how to do it in order to understand what we are receiving in the future. So there are going to be a lot of work there. And also in government, they have to adapt to the AI everywhere, especially in the laws and the regulations. So there will be a lot of new jobs.
And I also don't think it will be exclusively new jobs. There'll be a lot of immersion in existing jobs. So AI in support of other things. We have about 5 people and 10 more minutes. So let's try to address all the questions. Your name, affiliation, please.
Hi, thank you for the good presentation. My name is Asim, and I'm from the Twin Cities Innovation Alliance out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. I have a context question. My question is more around the design of the assumptions that's being made of the use case for AI, and how do you all perceive in managing the tension between the design intent, let's say for public good, that can shape the outcomes versus for profit? I'm not hearing the tension between managing what we assume is the right of collateral damage of process, of progress, versus the individual i.e. the workforce being responsible for their education and adapting, when the systems are the ones setting the tone for me to be able to play the game? And so how do you manage that tension?
Okay, I can take this one. I think you can build into AI these objectives so that it self-evaluates and reports. For me, that's the best way, you know, because unless you measure it, you won't know it. So if you build it into the program, you can get the answers and you can tweak it and change it, et cetera.
Yeah, I was gonna add something really quick. Ultimately, humans still rule. Like, I mean, just thinking about like all of this reversing of technology that you see happening in day to day, like self-checkouts happen. Everybody adopted them. Now people are going backwards because there's this huge backlash of like, oh, I can't actually talk to the cashier. I can't scan properly. The same thing with adoption of phones. There's this shift, right? So ultimately, humans still rule. So I think that we will figure out where we see it not merging to what we want to ultimately achieve.
Okay, next question.
Hi, thank you for the presentation. My name's Lex, and I work at the intersection of AI and disability. And so I was just wondering from a recruitment perspective, how you encourage humans to stay in the process before people like myself get screened out. Because even with having a surgery, there's a gap in your resume, all of a sudden you don't even get the opportunity.
Yeah, that's a great question, thank you. And actually we have trainings when it comes to how we work with candidates with disabilities, and those trainings actually are semi-annual, so once every 6 months or so. We're constantly educating our recruiters to be able to provide the right accommodations for candidates. And there are massive resources. I can speak to Amazon in this particular situation. There are massive resources where we can, you know, bring in those for, you know, sign language interpreters. We can be able to adjust interview processes based on needs. So we're constantly looking at that. And so, yeah, that is something in the recruitment process that is definitely on the minds, and we're definitely investing in the technology.
And not just for recruiters, but also for managers. Both for new employees and existing employees. I can tell you corporations really care. I'm sure there are other negative examples, but we do care. Roxana, but very short.
Yeah, I would like to add that there are also applications that can help the individuals to perform better in that interviews, because we have new AI tools that can be useful. So it is also part of the research that we have to do to find which one is best for the situation.
Thank you. And before we proceed, just think about your closing statements. We'll start with Nita and go around the table for less than 30 seconds, please.
Hi, thank you all for being here. My name is Liliana Montiel, I'm a data analyst. And my question is, I have family in Latin America who's already pretty disconnected from the technologies that we have here. And while I'm someone who personally embraces AI and the advancing technologies, I understand that that gap is only gonna widen. And my interest is in roles or positions that help kind of bridge that gap. And if there's not any current existing ones, what do you recommend for someone who is interested in creating those or being a part of that in like the current Wild West that is AI?
Thank you. Oh, yes, I understand your problem. It's a huge problem, because most of the people don't understand what the future is about. But I think we have to start with young people, as I mentioned before, to help the other people see what the benefits are and how they can work better with them. As I mentioned, most of the people understand, and in this competitive work, if you have that possibility to work with AI, it's very, very possible that you get the job first. So we have the tools, because to work with the AI, it's as simple as to have a smartphone. So you can train yourself there and try to use that for the purpose of your job.
Okay, and then the last question.
Good morning. My name is Victor Rogers, the founder of Sustainable Growth Creative. I am interested in identifying how I can prove to my employer that I have upskilled in the space of AI. I've been working in full lifecycle recruitment for 8 years and corporate recruiting for 2 years, and I've spent the last year scaling this venture, and there is a pilot coming out that I want to lead. So I'm interested in trying to leverage what I've been doing, coming to sessions like this, and I got about like 10 certs underneath my belt, but just want to position myself in the appropriate place to be able to, be ideal for that space. And also, I want to let everybody know I'm paying it forward. Anybody interested in learning about how to use AI, come holler at me. I really am excited about what's going on. I'm super passionate about it. And thank you to the panel.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you. So you're looking to make a transition from recruitment to AI? Is that what you're doing right now?
So I'm a recruiter, right, and I am leveraging AI to be more efficient. So I would like to say that I'm the best recruiter in the world, but now since I have AI underneath my belt, like, I'm 10 times better than what I used to be, and my company is about to pilot Gemini, right? So I want to figure out how I can get ahead of my, in essence, competition to show that I, you know, I'm already aware of what's going on, and just position myself in my current role to be the AI guy.
Yeah.
So as a manager, I can tell you that you need to start building trust with your management. Do a little bit more and more and more, and there's no limit for you if you, you know, do that.
I know. I like you. You're good. I believe in advocating for yourself through data. I mean, it sounds like you're a kick-butt recruiter. Let's go. So if you are able to work that much faster, I mean, I think the proof is in the pudding here. I think it's in the data, and I want you to be able to prove the types of profiles that you're digging up using these tools, that you're finding candidates that might not be discovered. I mean, they're, you know, in recruitment, we use LinkedIn all the time. I mean, being able to just continue to prove the value of what you're doing, and that you being 10 times better and you finding those candidates. I'm always in awe of those recruiters who are, you know, finding those candidates that, you know, there was like x-ray searches and things like that too. Like, I was never really like the best in that world, but those who actually, and I have found this in recruiting, those who adopt cutting edge technologies in recruiting will go further. And again, I think to Dehan's point.
Yeah, thank you, yeah. Jeff. We only have about a minute, so Jeff took 2 minutes away.
Well, yeah.
Can you, Nita, try to be like 30 seconds or less?
So my answer is prosperity. There's very, very little technology advancement that hasn't resulted in prosperity, so I think it's prosperity.
Yeah, it's prosperity as well. I'm sorry. He inspired me. I thought that was great. That was awesome. Let's go. Okay. No, it's prosperity.
Okay. I'm also positive about AI. So I would say don't stop learning. Be curious and develop your imagination, because this is the key asset for the future.
So my closure is that things are unpredictable. If you remember 2-3 years ago, it was all Corona. We were all worried about it. We were only thinking about it. What are we going to do with it? Corona went away. Now it's AI. Everything is AI. In 2-3 years, it might be something else. That's one observation. We don't know where things are going. And the second observation is, while we don't know where we are going faster and faster and faster. That's what AI brought. You know, things are much faster, just like this gentleman said. He's now 10 times faster, but it's true in many other areas. So you got to embrace yourself, buckle up, and drive. And thanks for coming.